Hello and welcome to the second episode of IMO. I am your host, Liam.
And I am Emil, also a host.
This episode is going to be focusing on games and indie games and our views and opinions on them. First, though, I wanted to just respond to a couple of people have asked where my episodes are going to be uploaded or whether they're just going to be on YouTube. What I want to do is I want to upload them to iTunes, so I'm setting up a RSS feed. And one person also mentioned Spreaker, which is a website where you can upload your podcast episodes or music, songs, whatever you like. But you can only upload 10 hours of audio, so I'm going to try and find an alternative. So if anybody has like a decent alternative, that would be brilliant if you could just comment or something on a nice place to upload podcasts. Preferably, it doesn't cost money. Spreaker, if you want to have more storage space, it's going to cost you like $20 or $30 a month, I think. So like 15, 20 quid. Yeah, that'd be awesome. This episode then is focusing on indie games. Now, I myself am not a massive indie gamer. I have certainly played some, but you, Emil, you've played a lot of indie games?
Yeah, I consider myself a connoisseur. I don't. I'm actually an asshole. No, I am a huge fan of original games that like have interesting styles, and that it just so happens that those games are indie. And I think there's a reason behind that, which you will go into.
Yeah, because looking at the kind of games that I've generally played more recently, I've never really taken games that seriously. I've always just kind of played AAA titles that we all, you know, just for general mind-numbing entertainment. So, for example, you know, FIFA football games or Call of Duty, Halo, and I know they all get a lot of hate, but to be honest, it doesn't really bother me because I just play them to waste time. I've never really, you know, looked into the depths of gaming really, like some people do.
I think like, there's a big divide, and I hate to use the terms casual and hardcore because, like, I think they're sort of,
I think it's kind of appropriate though because I would consider myself like a casual gamer. Like, yeah, I'm not going to sit there and spend a lot of money on gaming. I'm not going to buy the best quality headsets, or I'm not going to buy the best quality or invest a lot of money in games. I'll just pick up secondhand games or indie. In terms of indie games, I'll, you know, pick up one or two which look good, but I'm never really going to do much research, and I don't feel that I appreciate indie games enough, I think, once I just play, when I play through them.
Fair enough. I think, we definitely play games for different reasons. Like, having known you for a long time, we sort of, in fact, you introduced me to Xbox gaming, so that's kind of a big plus. Like, you know, like, sort of getting into the more popular titles such as Call of Duty and Halo and stuff like that. I do enjoy them, just sort of, loads of people are going to flame me for saying that Halo's a shallow experience. I think the single player is pretty interesting, but like the multiplayer, pretty standard multiplayer, sort of different types of game modes and stuff like that to play. Indie games definitely have a lot more originality, and I think I often play games for original content and sort of like content that tends to stray away from what would be considered a video game.
I suppose that's the main difference between the two, because if you were going to play a AAA title, you want something which is like you're comfortable with and that just helps you, tells you what all the controls are at the very start, and is very easy to play and is very mind-numbing, and you just get on and play it, which is very different. Like, you're not expecting something crazy new, because as you know from people who flame whenever there's a new like a new Call of Duty or Halo game which is vastly different, everybody, you know, goes nuts.
I find that the majority of the gaming community doesn't adjust well to change, which isn't good, because only hinders us.
Then with indie games, you don't know what you can, there's unlimited possibilities because it's one person's vision.
Yeah, I think because we just watched Indie Game the Movie, which is incredible. Shout out to Indie Game the Movie.
That's kind of what got us interested in doing a gaming podcast. Or this episode, at least, as a episode.
I forget who said it. I think well, they were saying at the beginning, all of them, like Tommy Raffinez and Ed McMillan, were saying that indie games are so like special because they're definitely more of a personal game. Whether it's, for example, Super Meat Boy, is a game that Tommy Raffinez and Edmund McMillan put a lot of heart and soul into. They said, oh, this is my childhood in a game. They're saying, like, oh, I want to make a game that my 13-year-old self would go crazy over, and whatever. With AAA games, which I'm not saying aren't fun. I mean, I love Call of Duty. I like it's a great multiplayer experience. It's, you know, it's fun. But at the same time, it's not deep on that kind of level. It's more like just a bunch of people were hired to do this job, and they do that for money and not for personal gain, I guess.
Well, that's kind of like the difference in generations. So if when you were when like, because it's not certainly not our generation, like our previous generation probably grew up when games were just taking off and people had to be innovative to sell because the technology obviously wasn't brilliant. So if you're sitting there, you know, developing a game for the NES, and almost everything has been done, which can be done on the console, you have to be innovative and come up with some crazy new game mechanics.
Oh yeah,
which
yeah.
will, you know, inevitably sell your game because it's something new on an old console. Whereas now, for the Xbox 360 and then the upcoming next gen consoles, people can just sit in a comfort zone and just play around with the same mechanics and continue to sell games because of the, you know, the core gameplay is what people are comfortable with. And I think that's why indie games are starting to take off, is because it does remind us of that like nostalgic time when people had to come up with new crazy fun ideas.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say that because a lot of the most popular indie games often have a retro style to them. Like, yeah. They look 16-bit, or they look like they're from the NES, SNES era.
Yeah, well, I think that's nostalgia.
I think they are definitely fueled by nostalgia. Which is interesting because they feel like that as well. Like, the Super Meat Boy, for example, is a game that aims to teach the player as it plays. It doesn't put a tutorial in your face.
Yeah.
It just says, okay, here's a level, do what you would do. Just move the buttons, press the buttons, move the joysticks, you know, do whatever it is. And then it just, you sort of start to learn slowly. And Mega Man X does this. You know, it sort of slowly teaches the player as you go along without putting a big button face and
Face. That's what I said earlier, is that, you know, on new consoles, they'll just give you a big block of text telling you exactly how to do everything you need to do.
Which, I think in some cases, okay.
It really depends on the game, but if it's like a really fun adventure-style game, which has lots of different mechanics, if they just give you a big block of text, then that's really not... That's a really wasted opportunity, because they could have, you know, used the game mechanics to introduce you and show you how it's done, so you feel like you're learning, rather than just being told how to do, you know, absolutely everything in the game.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, one of the main reasons I think indie games are so unique is because they don't have any sort of corporate ties as such. They're not sort of tied to a big, like, publisher like EA or Activision. Because if you go to a big-time publisher... And you say, okay, let's take Fez, for example. I'm going to make a game where it's about a little guy who realizes that his world is three-dimensional and you can rotate the world. Yeah. That's the premise of Fez. If you go to a big publisher and say, I want to make this game and you're going to publish it and it's going to make lots of money. Yeah. They're going to be quite, it's going to be quite a risky move for them to accept that deal because it's a unique idea.
Yeah.
And unique ideas often don't sell well. I think certainly the trend now is that publishers are cloning games, or they're only accepting games that are clones of older games. So Call of Duty, you'll notice that most first-person shooters have exactly the same controls as Call of Duty. Yeah? Which isn't a bad thing. They're good controls. But it just shows that repetition seems to be the thing.
It sells because... Like, you know,
and they know that that will sell.
We've already said it's because people are comfortable with the way things are, and the only, you know, things that will get them interested in the game is just one or two slight changes which will affect the gameplay, but is nothing really worth paying like £40 for. I know a lot of people have disagree with FIFA, which comes out every year, and it's a football game, and you know I do too. I think that you're not paying for anything different. The only thing you're going to get is new is like updated players and people and teams, and then updated graphics engine, maybe a slight change to the physics engine.
Yeah,
it's not worth paying £50 or £60
They do make sort of slight changes to the the physics engine of the ball and stuff. Like, they have a whole engine for the ball. It's pretty intense.
I think that it's, you know, it's very overpriced to be paying, you know, a lot of money for very slight changes. But at the same time, it, for a football game, I suppose it's necessary.
Yeah.
To release one every year.
I guess I don't know how football works. I'm not a like football person, but I guess teams change and like.
Unfortunately, I follow football.
Yeah, like teams change. You're not a true nerd, Liam. You're an outsider.
I'm like a pseudo nerd.
No, I think it's sad that I guess the word is innovation or like uniqueness is put down in the mainstream gaming industry because.
It's too risky, because AAA games, they'll spend so much money on a game. And for it to risk that much, it's not worth the exciting experience you might get for the money that you might lose.
But then you look at game. Okay, let's go way, way, way back to the NES era.
Yeah.
You had Mario. Everyone knows Mario.
Mario.
Mario. Mario. You have Mario. Super Mario Brothers. Pretty simple game. You move right and you jump.
Yeah.
That's literally... the only buttons you use, two buttons, yeah?
Yeah.
And it's, a unique experience. It's unique for its time. So you're moving right, and you're jumping, and you're collecting power-ups, and you're jumping on enemies' heads and stuff, and you're getting points for that, and you're finishing the level. Metroid came along and said, hey, what if we could move left? And it's okay. And it just completely changed the entire, the option to move left, as well as right... opened up an entire new thing. And now, Super Metroid, one of my favorite games, I'm playing it right now, it's incredible.
You can move up.
It's great. You can move up. You can move outside of space. No. It's great because you can explore, you can go around, and there's a whole, different area. There's so many different possibilities just by adding the left direction.
Yeah.
Yeah? And I like to think that... indie games are becoming the new Metroids. They're trying to change the swing of what would be considered popular. They may say that new ideas are too risky because they're sort of hit and miss. But at the same time, I think new ideas could, in the long run, change the gaming industry for a big part. It could revolutionize the way we think about games and stuff like that.
Cool. Do you want to talk about some of our favorite games and our favorite indie games, maybe?
Yeah.
I'll start with my favourite games. When I was younger, I played a lot of games on the GameCube, the Dreamcast, and the original Xbox. And even those consoles are fairly new. I never really played the NES. I know my dad played the Sega Saturn a lot, but you know that's way before me. My favourite games are Pac-Man World 2, and I love that game. It is... so strange, it's so odd, but I love it for that. I think it's really addictive.
That's another example of changing the way a game can be played. Because
Pac-Man is, you know, has so many things you could add on to it, and then to completely make it a complete 3D world and everything like that is really cool. And also, my other favorite game is Star Fox Adventures, and I know some people are probably crying right now because I've said that.
It wasn't bad. I think there's YouTube guy called Jontron did a pretty bad review of it. But because you bought that for me for my birthday, and it's not a bad game. It's just not amazing.
I think the reason why that game was hated so much was because if you played, which I didn't, which was Star Fox 64, if you played that game when the new Star Fox game was coming out, you would be expecting more of the same. Same style of game, the same sort of things that you love from that game. But Star Fox Adventures is totally different. It's much more ground-based levels instead of space-based levels.
Well, it's a retexture of a game that was being made completely separately called Dinosaur Planet.
I've never played that game.
You have. You played Star Fox Adventures.
Ooh.
I'm so... it literally is. No. The story... I forget. I don't know the exact story, but Rare... Was it Rare? That was a stupid thing to say. I'm sorry. The developer, whoever made Star Fox, they were okay, we're going to make an awesome game for the GameCube, so let's, make an awesome Star Fox game. And then there was another game called Dinosaur Planet that was being made somewhere else, and Shigeru Miyamoto, who is the president of Nintendo, or he basically is Nintendo. Like he went to like visit the studios where Dinosaur Planet was being made, and he was like, "This is going to be a great Star Fox game." So they just like trashed everything.
Oh my god, yeah. Really? I didn't know that. I thought you were about on about like a game which came out earlier.
No. It literally is a retexture of Dinosaur Planet.
I thought they'd like stolen it and then just. Oh, okay, I see.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to have a look into
Nintendo that. Are like known for doing that because, you know, Super Mario Bros. 2 is a rehash or like a complete rework of a game called Doki Doki Panic. I think it was called Doki Doki Panic.
Cool.
But like, yeah. Yeah.
Well, what are some of your favourite games then?
Some of my favourite games, I guess, like, I've got so many games that I play. From the top of my head, Super Metroid, Bioshock is awesome. Super Meat Boy, Binding of Isaac, all those sort of
they're all sort of indie games, yeah.
With the exception of Bioshock, which is
I think the only really recent indie game that I played pretty much all the way through was Osmos, which was really like addictive to play. It was really calm and nice and everything, and it literally consisted of you making bubbles get bigger for like 4 hours,
which sounds mundane, but like I've played Osmos and it's pretty interesting.
So entertaining for some reason. I can't even explain it. But then I guess that's why indie games are so, you know, popular nowadays, is because they just turn strange ideas into brilliant ideas.
Yeah, especially the work of Edmund McMillen, who I'm kind of a fanboy over. Like, I love Edmund McMillen. I love, like, the work he does. His artwork is incredible. But, like, you look at The Binding of Isaac, which is kind of like a roguelike, randomly generated game, where you sort of walk around a dungeon and you kill enemies.
Yeah,
and like
that game's so disturbing.
You just like it's really messed up. Like there's a lot of weird stuff in that game.
Yeah.
One of the power ups is like a clothes hanger that goes through your head. And bear in mind that you are a baby who uses his tears as bullets.
Basically, average parenting.
It's good. It's play that game with your kids. that's good. Give them a gun. They can go shoot up school. No, I don't agree with that. That's a whole different episode. Whoa. first of all, let me just get out of the way. I don't think that video games cause violent people. But unique ideas, strange, otherworldly ideas.
Yeah,
that I think I just make games entertaining because you play games to escape. I think it is a form of escapism for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And if you like a lot of, you can watch football. And then you go and play FIFA, it's like, okay, I'm basically controlling a football match, which is, I guess I can see the appeal of that, but it's not the same, in my opinion,
I think the appeal of that game is the fact you can create your own player and, like, be something I suppose.
Yeah, I guess so.
Also, I was going to say how in more mainstream and new games, there aren't very many new games which are of that, like, adventure style, which we saw a lot of on the GameCube and on the old consoles.
Oh, like 3D platformers and stuff like that.
Yeah, they're much rarer now because everyone wants to go for, like, realism. Like, check out the realism in Mass Effect 3.
Sucks so
check
much,
out the
yeah.
new realism in the new Battlefield game. So, no one... It's like trying to recreate real life, which is kind of like getting rid of that sense of escapism and more trying to, like, push the power of the consoles that we have or the computers that we have. So, you know, I'd love to see a return of more like more crazy 3D platformer games, but with the technology that we have now. Like, if we look at some old like Pac-Man World, for example.
Yeah.
Like, I love that game. If that was like an awesome new Pac-Man game was made for the Xbox new one, whatever it's called,
Xbox One.
How did I forget that? Xbox One and the PS4.
X-Bone.
Then that would. Oh, it'd be so amazing, because there's so much cool things you could do, but everyone now is just focusing on realistic shooters.
It sucks, yeah, because, art style is incredibly important as well. Like, I say, like, good graphics don't make a good game, okay? But
graphics
certainly can improve the experience. You look at a game like Limbo, which is just silhouettes. You're just a shadow,
yeah?
And, well, you play as a silhouette. And it's just this beautiful game, and it adds to the experience. I think, like, if it had different graphics, it wouldn't be the same experience. Not necessarily worse, but just wouldn't be the same experience. And now people are sort of trying to get that realistic graphic look, which I understand with Battlefield, because I've played Battlefield. It's like an awesome game.
Yeah.
It's like really, it's really fun to play, and like it's sort of quite adrenaline rushing. You know, you're sort of running through, and there's all sorts of stuff happening in really realistic fashions, stuff that you wouldn't normally do.
Yeah.
While sitting on your couch. But, like, then you look at Wind Waker, for example, for the GameCube, which completely changed Zelda, or The Legend of Zelda, how it looks.
Yeah. See, I completely forgot that was one of my favorite games as well. Like, the graphic style of that game. When I played that game, I didn't know that there were other, like, when I was little, I didn't know that there were other Zelda games. So when I played that game, it was totally amazing. Like, Zelda was totally amazing. And I just remember some of the puzzles, like, coming back from school and, like, trying to figure out some of the puzzles for hours. But, yeah, as you're saying, the art style in that game is amazing.
It was, I don't know if you know, but, like, there were a lot of hate for that game when it was coming out because we'd had games like Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask on the N64, and they sort of, well, they weren't realistic, obviously, because it was an N64, didn't have that kind of processing power or whatever, but, like, it was, they had a very unique style to them.
Yeah.
And Wind Waker came out, I was like, wow, what if it was cel-shaded? What if it looked like it was drawn or whatever? And what if they had all crazy faces? Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, I dig that, because it's an interesting take on something, it's a different take on something familiar, and I think, like, that's just another example of how a simple change can change an entire game.
Yeah. I don't think we should slate off that for new games, though, because that does happen. Like, Borderlands, for example.
Oh, I love the art style.
It has a fantastic art style, and it completely changes the game. I mean, if that was a realistic type game, it just wouldn't work. So, you know, some of the really cool kind of, like people cosplaying Borderlands look so cool if they can get their art style right.
Did you see that one with Ellie, and she, like, had drawn, like, black marks to make it look like he was cel-shaded, and it was awesome.
Yeah. And also Crackdown as a game I quite like, which has, like, a comic... It's, like, a comic book style.
Yeah, Crackdown 2 especially is, like, very cartoony and comic booky. One of the, like, recent games, which is actually one of my favorite games of all time, Bioshock Infinite, which has an incredible art style. It actually looks like an oil painting. Like, it's 3D, but it looks like it's been drawn and, like, painted, and it just looks like it's such an incredible game.
I played Bioshock, but I suck at it. For some reason, I can't even figure out why I'm so bad at Bioshock.
You're missing out, man. It's such a good game series. A lot of people didn't like Bioshock Infinite's, like, the way it ended, and a lot of people had issues with the combat and
stuff. Thanks to the internet, like, I pretty much know the ending to every game ever.
may or may not be a good thing. But yeah, it's, like, Bioshock Infinite is an example of a AAA game that, pushed boundary, well, not necessarily pushed huge boundaries, but it had an interesting art style.
Yeah.
And it's not something you would see conventional AAA game. Bioshock as a series is interesting because they had a lot of trouble trying to get that made. Ken Levine, who's the creative director of the Irrational Games, who made Bioshock, they had a lot of trouble trying to convince people that it was, like, going to be a good game because it had all these, they had the plasmid mechanics and stuff like that. They had, like, all these interesting things that had never been seen in a game before. Yeah. And again, another example of how being different can advance the game industry. And
well, then, in that sense, it could be that Bioshock was quite a risky game because that game could, you know, take off really well. Or, like, a lot of the games that I have for the Xbox 360 when it first came out, well, games which tried out new things and pretty much flopped. I'm not sure how well Cameo Elements of Power did, but I think that was one of the first games ever to ship.
It was like a launch release or something.
Yeah, and literally after it came out, that was all I ever heard of it. I also have a game which I can't even remember the name of, but it basically consists of you having, like, it's like a sword slash gun weapon, and it consists of you raising the ground. Do you know the name of that one?
I know what one you're talking about. Oh, wow.
We can't remember. I know the name of it somewhere. I'll probably stick it in the description if we can ever remember the name of it. I don't think I have it anymore, but it basically consisted of you raising the ground around you to advance through the level. Something that I thought sounded like a brilliant mechanic that I haven't really seen anywhere else before. But that game, it wasn't really that good in other areas of the game. It was quite glitchy. It was quite disappointing, really. And I just think that, you know, now because that game's come out, I don't think that mechanic will really be built on very much anymore since.
And it sucks because it's interesting. Yeah. If you look at the past games, like the PS2 is an example of a console that had so much weird stuff on it. Like, not a bad thing, it's a good thing. Okami, for example, is a game where, like, combat is entirely based, everything really is based around that you can draw.
I've never played that game, but Okami's awesome. I love the look of it.
And, like, Kingdom Hearts, basically they took Final Fantasy characters and they're like, what if we put them in a Disney universe? And it's like, that would never get made today because everyone's like, ah, oh, but it doesn't have really like testosterone pumped soldiers and stuff like that and whatever. And I think that's why indie games are important because they, if you look at Steam Greenlight, which is like you can sort of go and vote for games that look interesting and they may or may not get published on Steam.
Well, that's the thing, that now that that's come across, it's promoting indie games, and indie games can actually do well. Like Minecraft, I think it made over £40 million.
Yeah,
that's
true.
Like, and that was like a statistic from last year. So, you know, it's probably made twice as much now. Minecraft is a perfect example of a game which can be made by one or, you know, just a small group of people and branch out into something, you know, amazing. And we're seeing that happen more and more often. Like, you know, we both played Super Meat Boy, which is an awesome game.
Yeah, it's an incredible game.
Yeah, and that and all these type of things are being promoted through Steam now, which is basically the only... Or it's not the only, but it's certainly, I think, the best way of getting your game out there.
Yeah, it's Xbox, because it's such a good... I don't know, there's a lot of issues with the green light process at the moment, like the way it's done, like the voting system. I'm not sure, there was loads of issues with the way it worked out, but it certainly is a lot better than the Xbox Live Indie Marketplace, which is just a whole bunch of, like... Avatar games and, like, you know, really awful games
get through there. I think there should be some kind of voting system for that. I think it would work a lot better than whatever system they have now of greenlighting games for Xbox Live Indie Marketplace.
Well, as you said, with like indie games being made by a small group of people, there's a game called Cave Story, which was made by one guy called, I'm going to probably butcher his name or her name, his name there, Daisuke Amaya. Okay. I don't know how to pronounce that. His art name or pseudonym is Pixel.
Okay.
But yeah, he made a game called Cave Story, pretty well known. It was released in 2004, and it literally just him, no one else. Like, he did the music, he did the graphic design, the programming, everything, and the level design and all that stuff. And it's an incredible game. You can download it for free, or you can buy it on Steam for like a plus edition and add some different things. But like, that's just an example of a game that. One game developed over the course of 5 years, like, is so good, and it just shows that, like, there are people out there that are ready, they're prepared to, like, basically put their lives on the line financially. Like, I mean, if you watch Indie Game the movie,
there's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, there's, like, so much money going down the drain, and, like, yeah, you're just on the brink of...
I think that's the beauty of the internet now, is that you can promote yourself so well with when you've got a game in development. All it takes is you to put out a decent trailer, and suddenly you've got swarms of people able to help promote you and to give their own views on the game. But also, I think that can be an indie game's downfall.
Oh yeah,
because if the game doesn't appeal to you, there are people out there who if it doesn't appeal to them, they're just gonna rant about how bad it is, and ultimately that can ruin someone's indie game even before it's released. So, as Fez 2 was cancelled recently.
Oh god. It's like a shitstorm of just nope.
Yeah. So, there's so much controversial things,
Yeah, if it gets to the right people, like if you put an indie game out there, and you, like, for example, you put it on Reddit, there's like a whole subreddit for indie games and stuff like that. You put it on there, and then, like, there's a slight chance that someone from the Yogg's cast could be like, oh, that looks interesting, I'll play that, and I'll record it. And then suddenly millions of people are getting, looking at this game, and like, oh, I want to download this or whatever, and I want to play this. And then you've been made famous. I think that's what happened with Minecraft, is that
That's the thing, there are so many famous YouTubers out there now who could quite easily find your game, pick it up, and play it. Maybe just once for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you've got, 20, 30, 40,000 people trying to access your game. And didn't that happen with Cube World? And it, like, completely crashed their servers.
Yeah, Cube World, like, they had to, I don't know if they took it down, or, like, for a short amount of time, they had to take it down the place where they were selling their open alpha for, like, $20 or whatever. Because so many people were buying it, and their servers couldn't handle the amount of people.
But I suppose
that's
not a bad thing, because
it's good.
It means that guy now, with that one brilliant idea he had, is like pretty much set for life. With he can continue to add to that game and things like that. Also, another great thing with indie games is that They don't, the indie game developers don't promote DLC, which I have such a problem with.
DLC.
When you buy a AAA title, it's almost as if you don't get the full game, because...
Now it is, yeah.
You know, well, I suppose it didn't used to be, but... with Call of Duty Black Ops 2, when you get that game, it's adding, like, an unfair balance, because there are certain, like, weapons, I think, or weapon designs or something like that, which you can just buy, and it's almost as if, well, hold on, did I not get the full game when I bought it? You know, I spent, like, 40, 50 quid on this game, am I not going to get all the features? And then, like, when you get, you know, like, one map on some...
Yeah, it sucks.
On some game, and they expect you to buy, you know, all of the other ones. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
Like, DLC used to be done well, and, like, indie developers, some indie developers do DLC. Like, The Binding of Isaac did have DLC. The difference between that was, like, that game was released, and the DLC was released a lot, like, a long time after... And Ed McMillan said that, like, the only reason he made DLC for that game was because his wife had completed everything and she wanted to play it more. So, like, yeah. He was like, oh, let's make more then. And, like, he released it as DLC. And I think that that's the right way to do DLC. Like, you release your game and you see if people like it. And then, like, if they ask for more, you release it and say, okay, let's make more content. Because DLC has a lot of potential. Like, Borderlands 1, for example. That was made, and then people were like, oh, we want more Borderlands. Like, yeah. We've done everything there is to do in Borderlands, but we don't want to stop playing it. So, like, okay, let's make more deal. Let's make more content.
Yeah.
And that's available to everyone. But now the problem
I think
is...
the difference between that and indie game DLC, though, is that for many indie game developers, it's not really about the money or the sales or anything like that. It's more about how the game actually turns out in their opinion. Like, if the game is good in their opinion... It doesn't really matter how it does, because it's like a AAA title isn't really an expressive art form. An indie game might well be, because it's like a representation of them on screen.
Yeah.
It's like it's one person's mind as a game, not like corporations.
The fact that like, because I'm all for the video games are art thing. I think they are art. I think it's difficult for them not to be art. But like. That's all down. That's like huge.
Yeah,
debate.
That's a whole other thing.
But like, you look at a game like Bastion, which was an awesome indie game. I think the company was called Supergiant, but I can't remember. Like the Bastion, if you like Google search it, you'll get tons of results. It's an incredible game, and like that. Okay, so it's got amazing art style, awesome sound design, awesome music, and you know, awesome gameplay and combat, and it's all awesome. But the fact that such a small team was able to make that, like the fact that you're playing something and you know that by playing it, you're like just, you're playing something that you know someone has put a lot of work into.
Yeah.
And I think that adds to the experience a lot. It sort of helps you appreciate it more. Whereas if you're playing a AAA title, like at the moment I'm playing Metal Gear Rising Revengeance, which is a huge, like massive AAA title by... Hideo Kojima, like it's still an awesome game, it's fun, but at the same time it's like, well, a lot of people probably didn't, you know, a lot of people went to work that day and they felt like shit and they were like, oh, I can't be bothered, I can't believe I'm programming this and like all that stuff, and it's like it's not as heartfelt, I guess.
Well, you know, when you buy a AAA title, you spend a lot of money on it, so the developers of the game are gonna have to feel as if there's enough content there, so they end up filling it with like crap and fillers that isn't really relevant or adds to the game in any way. It's just like, it just probably makes it feel more full. Whereas with like an indie game, there's, you know, the price of it is gonna be cheaper, so it's only going to be things that they want in the game which is going to be included. So if you look at any indie game like Audio Surf, for example, you couldn't have a game similar to Audio Surf be a AAA title, because, you know, who's going to spend £40 or £50 on a game where you play with music tracks? But if you're only spending a few pounds on it, then Audio Surf is amazing value for money, because it's really fun and it doesn't, you know, and it doesn't get boring all that quick. And there's lots of cool little things you could do to it. But you, with an indie game like that, you couldn't have a AAA equivalent, which is where I think indie games shine. Because,
well, you kind of have Guitar Hero for like Audio Surf, kind of like.
I suppose, yeah.
But I get what you're saying. Like, that's an issue. Value for money is a huge issue in the gaming industry at the moment. Like, you can't really sell a game based on the content because that's subjective. How much someone's going to enjoy a game is entirely subjective, and you can't price a game based on that.
Yeah.
So you can't say, oh, this game is only 10 hours long, so I'm only going to charge £20 for it or whatever. That's kind of... prices of video games are very much judged on how many people developed it and how expensive the software was and the equipment was to develop it and stuff. But with indie games, you definitely get what you pay for, which is, in many cases, a good... In fact, sometimes you get a lot more than what you paid for. Like, Super Meat Boy is a huge game. Right? It's a long game, and there's, like, different, like, two versions of each world and stuff like that.
Yeah.
A lot of work's been put into it, and you can get it for really cheap. Like, it's £7 now or whatever. Yeah, it's really cheap. So, yeah.
I think that's about it, really, for the indie episodes.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Again, I just want to emphasize, if you have any decent places where I could upload the podcast, besides, once I have an RSS feed set up, YouTube and iTunes, then that'd be brilliant. Any shout-outs you want to give?
No.
Okay, so I think we're about done there. Thank you very much for listening this time. Please...
Oh, I guess if you're watching on YouTube, don't be afraid to comment and stuff and constructive criticism and feedback. And
this is a very new podcast, and it's very amateurly done. So, you know, if there's anything you want to ask us, and that's also one thing I have is I have a contact email which I'll put down in the description, which is contact.iamopodcast@gmail.com. Which is just if you want to, ask us a question or a topic you want us to cover or something like that. Literally anything, just give us an email. I'll probably end up setting up a Twitter or something like that. But I don't think that's really necessary now. But yeah, that's about it. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.